Started. Call the meeting of Municipal Services Committee for October 20th to order. And first item on the agenda is adoption of minutes from the September 10th meeting. Could I have a motion in a second?
So moved.
Great. You get that, Kim?
I did not. I'm sorry.
Who was it who moved the first motion?
I did. Grace.
Grace.
Thanks, Grace. Sorry, I'm eating my lunch.
That's okay. My audio keeps cutting out too, so I apologize.
And was that John or Mike on?
John seconded.
Thank you.
I'm eating an apple.
You guys are way too healthy. All righty. So any changes or corrections to the minutes as presented? All right. Hearing none. All those in favor of adopting the minutes as presented, say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? All righty. Minutes are adopted as presented. Item two is public comment. Do we have anyone from the public that would like to provide comment at this point? Pauline, no anyone there? Mm-mm. Okay, great. So we've been talking. Item three is just kind of we want to continue the conversation that we've had back at previous meetings about diversity, inclusion, or and equity. And Pauline and Kim did a quick survey. So Pauline, I don't know if you want to touch on that. This is really just a general conversation, just to share information, get some questions out on the table, and kind of, I'll say, best practices. Although at this point in time, I think we're all learning and navigating through this topic.
Absolutely. I can go through really quickly what the survey results were, because we actually had 14 people who responded, which I was very happy with in that short period of time. And it was a good mix as well. We had a lot of small towns as well as medium and the larger towns, and Hartford actually responded as well. So that was actually really, I thought that was very good. I'm sorry about the colors on this. All right. So anyway, in terms of things that people have done, I would say about a third of the towns have done something along the lines of diversity training or implicit bias training, discussion forums, or other kinds of training as well, or other activities. I'm going to go through these very quickly. In terms of planned activities, I would majority of the towns, municipalities are planning something along those lines. So that's fairly clear. This is also posted for later consumption if people want on our on the web. In terms of comments, I'm going to read through all of them. I would say that some of the towns had there was some of the comments included the challenges of doing something with COVID-19 going on and so that there was some challenges with regards to that a lot of activity going on, I would say, in terms of people trying to do move forward or do something along the lines of diversity or awareness training activity for municipal employees and things like that. So sort of how I would frame it in terms of discussions in terms of what people are doing, and just discuss in terms of what if I may, the CROG employees will be doing training it's two half days in terms of that, but something that this was something that my husband did that I thought was very interesting and cool. It was what they called now I'm drawing a blank, but it was on beads of privilege. And so it's not only just looking at privilege in terms of race or ethnicity, but also in terms of educational background. If you were the first one in your family to go to college, and so you added a bead each time you were in a sort of a category of privilege, including gender, sexuality, and things like that. And I think that it raised awareness for him in terms of where he was from and what his background was. And so that's one of the things that we will be doing as part of that training of understanding different areas where you can have an advantage.
Pauline, I'm interested, are you folks using an outside facilitator? Are you doing it kind of homegrown in-house, or how's that training going to be conducted?
We are using an outside facilitator. We're using NCCJ. Mm-hmm. I forget what they stand for, but
yeah.
So it's, I'm looking forward to that.
In the old days, it was the National Conference of Christians and Jews, but I think they have grown up since then.
Right. I think I think it stands for something else now.
So, what else are some folks doing either at the organizational level or in the community? Certainly.
So I'll chime in. We have a very, very inactive Human Rights and Relations Commission that really never meets. So I'm proposing that our council change their charge, their ordinance, to require them to be responsible for taking on training and dealing with those events versus just being a complaint-based agency that doesn't get complaints. To actually, we have a hard time filling it because they don't do anything. Yep. So if we actually gave them something productive to do, that would be kind of a focus group that takes it out of the direct political realm of the R's and the D's and have its citizens providing training for citizens. So we're starting that discussion and we'll see where it goes. But, you know, most of us have to have human rights and relations requirements. I know it's required if you have a community development block grants. So let's try to use what we got instead of create something brand new.
So playing off of what John's mentioned, Windsor has a human relations commission that's been pretty active in the last half dozen years or so. And so they've been, in terms of community awareness and outreach, they've been kind of carrying the mantle, if you will, on that. They've created are implementing a series of webinars. They're calling it the Race, the Series. And it's going to talk about, you know, have various speakers from around the state that they've identified. That's going to be open to all residents to be able to participate. And they're going to touch on topics such as, you know, what is systemic racism? They had one two weekends ago, I believe it was, on a speaker from New London, a gentleman by the name of Kevin Booker. And he spoke about systemic racism, white privilege. They're going to be doing a series continuing that every probably once a month through the winter is their hope. Last night, the town council acted on a proposal by the Human Relations Commission, which was a little bit contentious, was to do a street mural in town. And so that got a little bit, a little bit more political than I wanted it to be. So they're working on that. They have traditionally done for the last, goodness gracious, 10 years, that every fall they do they call it a one book, one Windsor community book discussion. And most of the years it has had some something to do with human relations. This particular year it was around race relations, if you will. And so that's kind of what our Human Relations Commission is doing.
Cool.
So
is that a lot of that up on your website that we can steal it from?
Some of it is, John. Yes.
All right, great.
I think we posted.
I'm sorry. Read and review and then steal it.
Oh, I call it borrowing a page out of someone else's playbook.
Good. So.
Peter, I would say that I also have utilized all the resources that I have available, including your website. And we did get some ideas, which we are implementing. And by the way, your folks are doing a very good job. We're going to have a conversation.
Can you tell my town council that?
I will. We are going to have a conversation on race on November 10th. We're going to have Joel Murchison from a group that she calls the Mommy Group, that is a consultant on diversity and inclusion. And we're going to have a 75-minute video session with the entire town. So we're looking forward to providing the opportunity for our residents to understand, learn, listen, and share experiences. So we can see this going forward as perhaps an occasional series that we would do.
Great. What was the name of that the consulting group?
Executive Mommy Group LLC. Huh. Joelle Murchison, she's got a very good resume. And she, matter of fact, she's done some work in East Hartford.
Great.
And I talked to Marcia, and Marcia gave her a really good recommendation.
Okay. Haven't run across her firm yet. So
she's local.
Good. In terms of kind of the police on the law enforcement side, I know a number of you have done this. In Windsor, we have the police chief and I hosted a community listening forum back in early September, and basically it was wide open. We didn't do a presentation. We basically just took questions, and it was for about an hour and a half or so. When we're fortunate that. You know, many of the residents that participated really wanted it was less about them sharing their opinions. It was more about asking what our police department had in terms of policies, procedures, training. And so I think it was a pretty productive conversation and dialogue. So we're going to continue to do that in a couple different phases or ways. We're going to try to involve other police officers, you know, our sergeants and our patrol officers involved in that. And so it's not just the chief and the town manager. So we'll see how that goes later. We're going to try one between now and the in Christmas holiday. We'll see how that works out. And hopefully it'll be a little bit more of a dialogue in versus us answering questions.
Peter, Tony has her hand up.
Great. I'm sorry, Tony.
That's okay. We've had a bit of a controversy in this town. E.O. Smith High School hired armed school security guards through the town. The controversy was partly the mechanism of the hire, which is irrelevant. But what has happened, and here this is my point, is that the discussions have divided the people who participate in the open hearings on race are of one opinion. And the people who participate in another set of discussions are of another opinion. And they don't cross paths. So there isn't any cross-fertilization. And I am really concerned about I'm concerned because we have a significant group of people who certainly are not prejudiced, and that bias has no place in their hearts, and who don't treat everybody the same, whether they're pink or purple, polka dotted, which is a sentence which really does raise my hackles, because it's a classic statement that it reveals that you don't understand race issues. So I don't know how we bring these two groups together, because they are talking past one another. We've just created a human rights commission also, with a charge to review our policies, not just to review complaints. And they're kind of, they're just beginning their work. They have a lot to do, and they're not quite sure where to go either. I think they think it's going to be easier than it is. But I am really concerned about bringing on board people who have no idea that their actions and thoughts harm people at this point.
That's all good points, Tony. Is there anybody looking at doing cooperative, like training? Anybody talked about trying to partner with a neighboring community or other agency to try to gain, I guess, buying power or efficiencies? Because we've just gone out for an RFP, and we're clear, you know, large enough with, you know, with 250, 300 employees, and when you include in the part-timers. But I was wondering if any of the smaller communities had been talking about doing any kind of, you know, joint effort in that realm.
There's been some opportunities out there. I know Kenya Rutland was doing implicit bias training.
Yeah.
He's obviously a dynamic speaker. Always a pleasure to have. So there's been some sponsored by CCM and COST. It's trying to find time in the COVID world to, you know, fit some of these things in. It's just really hard.
Yeah, that's what we're finding. We did bring in the National Association of Black Law Enforcement Officers this month, and so all of our officers are going through, I believe it's a four hour block or 6 hour block of training that, you know, talks really about fair and impartial policing, and kind of some of it's a refresher for some of our officers. Others, it's pretty brand new. So they're actually in town, or not in town, but they're doing the virtual training this month for all of our officers. But we are having trouble scheduling stuff for our full-time, the rest of the organization. I'm too old-fashioned. I still want to do it in person and have that interaction, and make it a little bit more, hopefully, my mind, it makes it a little more richer, but I guess I'll catch up with the times one of these years.
So Peter, you had mentioned earlier that I was looking at something. Our steering committee of the town council is looking at whether we want to create a civilian police review board. And one of the ideas was whether there'd be a role for something that would be regional, because on an annual basis, we get like 3 or 4 police complaints a year. Most of them are very minor. We obviously went through one that was catastrophically large, and the community, you know, is still hurting from that, and our litigation is going to go on for decades probably. But when you have a bad employee, no matter whether a cop or not, you got a bad employee. So I'm afraid to set up a whole structure of a civilian review board to have them sit and not do anything for 5 to 10 years, and then, you know, be called to action suddenly. It's kind of like our Human Rights and Relations Board. Typically they have to have resources and experience and knowledge, and whether you have that within one town or not, But there's a feeling that there needs to be this if there needs to be this outside person, they have to understand what policing is, but they also have to understand what human rights are. So the question is whether that would be an opportunity for a regional collaboration, which may need to have an annual budget attached to it if they have to have like attorneys or something on retainer to advise them, or a structure. So just want to know if there's any interest in that. And I know a lot of towns on the call don't have police departments, but you know, council said, well, we don't have any civilians involved. And I said, yeah, you do. It's, that's what the town manager is. You know, I am the hire and fire of those officers. So the appeal comes to me, and I'm a civilian. I'm not part of that group, but that didn't go over well. wasn't broad enough. So I'm looking for solutions and didn't know if anyone else has one, but I'm an awful lot of work for something that would get minimal use and fortunately minimal use, but when you need it, you need it.
Yep. What are folks' thoughts on that idea? It's right now, it hasn't become a hot topic. That topic has not been strongly suggested here in town in Windsor. So we haven't really gone down that path too far. So what are some other folks thinking or about John's idea, or how are you guys addressing this potential? Anybody out there?
Crickets. So again, I see a lot of towns that don't have police agencies. So, yeah. You know, obviously if you have resident troopers or whatever, there isn't a state police civilian review board. So I'll take that. I'll go back and say at this point, there's not overwhelming need, because a lot of people don't have it. I mean, we're down there with the smaller departments in the state.
Yeah, John, in Plainville, we're just, it really hasn't become an issue in town. I guess at some point in time, if it does, you know, it might be worth looking in that direction. It's like our ethics board. You know, we started up 10 years ago and we haven't had an ethics complaint in 9.5 years. And, you know, and then, you know, so I'd hate to think what we would do if we had an ethics complaint today, because there's nobody left. But, you know, be the same thing with the civilian review board, as you described with the police, you know, in your town, you know, so.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think Mike had his hand up at one point in time.
Oh, thanks, Pauline. Yeah, sorry, Peter, just to go back for a moment sort of about what towns have done to, you know, either react or proactively look at some community conversations and specific to the price. So the couple of things that we've done, none of them are on a recurring basis, but they've just been a few sort of recurring things in Tolland are, we had a State of Connecticut trainer come out at no cost and do a cultural diversity training for the public back in July. This was right around the time that there was a lot of protests going on out there. And so that was something that they came in and did that for free. We had about maybe 20 or 25 people on Zoom at 6 o'clock on a Thursday night. And we were anticipating more than 100 people, but only 25 signed up. It was supposedly going to be a, you know, big numbers and didn't pan out that way. The other thing that we did more recently was about 2 weeks ago, we had three professors come in from three different Connecticut universities, and they did an expanding your racial lens discussion for relatively cheap. The three of them combined only cost $900. And they did a lot of research specific to Tallinn. They looked at our census data, our demographics, and it wasn't only based on racial challenges, but also on socioeconomic. So they came in and did a pretty deep dive on the wealth gap in Tallinn. And they even did a breakout session using Zoom, which was cool, that they had each of the professors moderated a different room. And then there was smaller conversations happening within those breakout rooms. And for that one, we got about 50 people that came, which was pretty good. And then also over the summer, I had participated in Sustainable CTs. They had a series of classes on Friday that were about different things, including privilege and LGBTQA things. So that was good. I just attended those myself. I didn't require any staff to go to those. But so we've been doing kind of things like more like here and there, nothing really recurring. We're also obviously keeping an eye on our budget, because even the $900 from the professors, we had to kind of figure out who would fund that. And it ended up being the Library Foundation that funded it. So they picked up the tab on that for us. And then just kind of another thing I wanted to mention too, not necessarily specific to racial tension, but when we talk about diversity and inclusion, our council about maybe 2 months ago created a new commission on people with disabilities to talk about how they can be included better into the community and to the discussions. So that's something maybe a different different angle, but also very important. Thanks.
Great, thanks, Mike. Anybody else have anything to add at this point in time to share? I think it's good for us to continue to just share information, what we're up to. And I love that, Mike, about maybe I'll reach out to you, find out who these professors at UConn was, because I like that. Sounds like it was an interesting session that they did for you. But anybody, Pauline, anybody got their hand raised or want to jump in?
Tony does, and I have one thing after she has it.
All right, Tony.
Has anybody looked at the results from any of these conversations, whether people say they've learned or their mind has been changed or anything? I mean, it's one of these classic evaluation problems where we're looking at inputs, but I'd like to look at outcomes.
Mm. Yeah. The just from a Windsor perspective, they have not yet developed they're trying to develop an evaluation form that the folks that are for the Human Relations Commission's race series that they're having. So we're going to probably try to add in something like that, you know, at least get a qualitative response back to see what people thought, if it was helpful or not. So, but we haven't done anything on a real formal basis at this point.
And I have a plug for a podcast by the New York Times. If people are interested, it's about education and diversity in education, called Nice White Parents. It's cringeworthy, but I usually don't plug podcasts, but this one is very good. And on how challenging it is to making the educational environment diverse. It has hope at the end and also a little depressing at the same time. So, but I highly recommend it. It's very well researched. It just focuses on one middle school in New York, and it's very well researched. And you can apply it to Connecticut, Chef V. O'Neill, so that's my little plug.
Great.
I have a quick question. Sorry, this is Melissa. My video kept dropping, so I might have missed this in the beginning, and I just ended up shutting it off. But just in general, are towns mostly considering training for internal for staff, and not just in police departments? I mean, all the efforts that we have that I talked about in the response to the survey were related to the committee that we have and the community efforts, but not necessarily, we haven't talked about training our staff yet. So just curious in general, if that's sort of where everyone's headed.
I know from Windsor's perspective, we're heading, we're at two-pronged path. All employees in the organization will have some level of training in the next 60 days or so. And then we're doing more of an awareness program for the community side of it, Melissa.
Okay.
Anybody else have information to share to Melissa's question? All right. If we're good, let's move I'd like to move to the next report now that, you know, spend the next few minutes talking about status reports. And Pauline, you want to take this on?
I needed Lyles, you're on mute, but sign up for me. Sorry about that. I was talking, but not being heard. As we go into status reports, I do have one announcement. Jessica Muirhead, who I feel like I just hired, this is her last week here at CROG. So that's she's going to be working in Kevin Limbo's office. Setting up one of his programs. So
Pauline, that's a good sign when you hire staff and they move on to bigger, you know, different positions. And so take that, you and Lyle should take credit for that.
I need to have people stop poaching. I need to have people stop poaching my people. So that's an announcement. So we are going to be structuring. So since the CRPC bids are sort of our bread and butter, Kim will be taking over that function for those day-to-day activities. We're looking to hire someone to help us with the IT services side. So that's that will be, and because we're hiring an administrative assistant in the process of that'll relieve Kim from her administrative assistant duties, which we were going to relieve her anyway, but we were originally going to wait until Lyle retired. But since he pushed that off, we decided to move ahead. We decided to move ahead with the executive assistant prior to Jessica making this announcement. So it has worked out, or will work out. And please stop poaching my people. All right. So Jessica is on the call, but I don't think she's on video. But this will be her last. Last meeting with us.
She's there. I can see her.
Oh, okay.
The rat.
It's just maybe it's just my screen. All right. I'll take this unless Kim or Jessica, one of you, want to speak. I'll just go through the status reports. And then we can move on. So asphalt pavement crack ceiling opened at the end of September, and we're bidding currently for protective clothing. That's fire protective clothing, not PPE in terms of COVID PPE. If you see that across your wire, quantities, this is very important. Quantities for gasoline are due next week. Gasoline is one of those bids where you cannot piggyback. Please get those in, as well as pavement markings and traffic guidelines, which is one you can piggyback on. So if you don't give us your quantities, we'll survive. Conducting the reverse auction for electricity also next week. And there are still opportunities other than the reverse auction where you could still take advantage of services like the audit services, as well as other services within the Energy Consortium. We are bidding for the job order contracting contractors. So last year we bid for the consultant and Gordian Group was chosen. And so we are currently bidding for the contractors, four regions. There's going to be a mandatory pre-bid meeting for construction and road and bridge, and that will be in Manchester. It is a very large room, so we can fit up to 50 people with 50% capacity. So since now we're at 75% capacity, usually we get 20 or 30 per bid. So it's a safe environment, or safe or I should say safer. ADMS, as we said last month, is entering into program mode. I'm working on the demos, and that will be coming soon. Sort of was derailed by someone quitting on me. Salary survey, you should have received the notification that this municipal salary survey is now open for data entry. If the default is that we automatically allow the CEO and CAO, and then you designate who you want to register. So if we have someone register who is not the CEO or CAO, we check with you to make sure that they are the ones that you want to have enter the data.
Hey, Pauline, quick question. Mm-hmm. If you've done that in the past, does
it's already done.
Already good.
Thank right. you. So the people who are already registered should still be able to access. GIS, the GIS continues to do the CAMA data processor. So that's the automatic upload from your CAMA data to the GIS. So that was a new improvement for the new system, and that's ongoing. We're going through each of the towns slowly but surely, and we'll get through all of them at some point in time. We continue to do, it's out there and continues to be something that we utilize. Human resources, the consulting group held the FMLA upcoming changes webinar. There's a recording available if you need that. And cybersecurity continues to meet on a bi-monthly basis. I think it's the first Thursday or the second Thursday of every other month. So I think, Crumbling Foundations. We continue to do the request for qualifications. In terms of the issues, we are going to be putting on CROG's legislative agenda the need to have CIFSIC life cycle be longer than it currently is, as well as the tax assessment reduction that is going to expire fairly soon. So those are two things that are going to go on the legislative agenda. And I believe that's it for status updates.
Great. Thanks, Pauline. Anybody have questions for Pauline, Kim, or especially Jessica?
Peter?
Yes.
Question on Crumbling Foundations. Are we going to be meeting again or any update meetings? And there was an announcement today that they've stopped taking applications again until at least July.
It's a money flow issue. It's two issues. There's a money flow issue on CIFSIC's part, and also a life cycle issue. So based on the money flow that's coming in, the number of applications they have, the amount of time it takes, because it's based on the healthy home funds and the bond commission, they're sort of dependent on those things happening before they have money to commit, or and then once they commit that money, they have to be done before I believe right now they're slated to go to 2024.
Yeah.
And I think they're running out of time and money in terms of that. So they may have the money, but they won't have the time to be able to complete all those based on the number that they're on.
So basis. I reached out to CESIF, to find out where my application was, and I never heard back.
I would continue to reach out, John. They are not.
So since I didn't hear from them, I'm assume I'm not in a group that, you know. But the press release said there was applications through February, and mine was earlier than that. So just puzzled. I just wonder if there's something breaking down that CROG needs to look into, or maybe they just saw my name and shredded the paper. But I thought I had a fully accepted application. The second thing that has been in the press that might be good for the committee to meet and talk about was the advances that UConn is making in a testing program and their funding through NIST. It seems that, one person makes a difference, and Steve Wermer leaving, the urgency and activity seems to have waned.
Mm-hmm.
So I just didn't know, especially as we get towards the legislative session, if we ever have one, but having, the interaction with the elected officials at those meetings, I thought was also important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're just losing something by just letting progress go without having updates and urgency.
Mm-hmm. So we can definitely plan on having a meeting, especially before the late legislative session between now and January. We'll definitely schedule that. And Lyle had some update, I think.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Peter. We have a meeting scheduled with the treasurer on monetizing the surcharge for crumbling foundations into a revenue bond to speed this up. So that's, I think, one of the more hopeful signs. It's a sort of zero net cost, but the idea would be to sort of monetize that surcharge and then move a lot more homes forward. But I can't speak to your particular application that you're talking about, but I think the idea of having another review of where we are, but also this, we'll give you an update on this treasurer meeting in terms of monetizing the revenue bonds. We're gonna try and get administration support for that. So we have an agenda: extend the life of CIFSIC, extend the tax relief, and monetize the surcharge so we can get revenue bonds issued. So that's a couple of things going on. Just wanted to give you an update on that.
Great, that sounds like an interesting possibility in terms of the revenue bond.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I mean, the main point is it simply speeds up the whole process. There's not, and again, as you well know, money right now is very cheap. If you can get a bond, get it done in the front, you'd have to have the surcharge extended, but a revenue bond would allow us to get to, a few hundred homes more rapidly. So FYI. So it's not like nothing's happening. We're trying to do that.
Right. Anybody have any other questions regarding those project status moving on to municipal service information sharing. Anybody have anything else to share with the group?
I think last time I mentioned the EDMS, I know somebody's leaving and it's creating staff impact because everyone's picking on you. But we do need to try to get some budgetary numbers out by at least December.
Yep.
So that town budgets can be developed if we want to try to push for the impact of that.
Yep, I'm aware. We're working on that. I would say in the next week or two, I'll be able to at least do budget numbers and maybe a demo in early or mid first or second week of November. My goal.
You could announce those at the cost
technology forum. Meeting. Yep.
Yep. Be a good call.
Oh, that's a good point. Great. Yeah, because that's November 5th. So yeah, we'll definitely do that. It's a good idea.
Anybody on Pauline that looking to speak?
Peter, can I mention something real quick?
Please.
Pauline, we had attached the Salvation Army is going to be holding a food distribution on October 23rd. It's a Friday. It'll be at Enfield Square. It's from 9 to 1. And, you know, it's open to anybody, anyone in need. So I just thought we might want to share this with our towns. And I'd be happy to send it out to anyone who would like to get a little more information on it.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Kim.
And Mike has his hand raised.
Hi again. So this probably might be a better question for the legislative committee, but I figured I would ask us this group first. So we're starting our budget process again, of course, like, you know, everyone else is, I'm sure. And the fire chief brought to my attention an idea that I wanted to see if anybody else had thought about in terms of, you know, potentially being a new revenue stream. So has anybody considered maybe pushing legislation to allow charging for lift assists in your communities? It's apparently something that the somewhat burdensome to the fire EMS services in our town, where they go, they, you know, it's called in, 911's called, a firefighter EMT responds, and you know, somebody needs help getting up or out of their chair or something like that. And then they refuse to go to the hospital. And so there's no, basically there's no record, there's no charge for the service that just happened. You know, the firefighter departs, the EMT departs, and there's no exchange, there's no, you know, time, cost of money or anything like that. So is there any idea or any thoughts about maybe can we push legislation to create a funding stream for that?
I think I would, Mr. Chair, I would consider that Michael Bull on chairing for the legislative committee. but no, please send me an email or to Pauline or anyone here and we'll put it in the hopper. Just a commercial. We haven't pestered people about the CROG legislative committee till after the election. We'll be putting that together. So if you have ideas like that, we would certainly put them in the hopper. We're looking for volunteers. I'm sort of putting a BDI here on a number of members on the call in terms of our legislative committee, but we'll have a rapid legislative committee. The suggestion, however, and again, you can digest this before our first legislative committee meeting, for those of you that volunteer, we're suggesting a pretty short agenda that's very focused, given where we are and the whole situation, that we not have a very, very long laundry list and maybe 3 to 5 items. For example, the transportation fund is going belly up, a technical term, which will mean that basically transportation projects will stop in the region unless they fix that. So there's a few fairly big items, but in the meantime, Michael, please, I'm not discouraging at all, please send along legislative ideas. Maybe Pauline can volunteer to take them, and we'll put together a legislative committee, and we are looking for volunteers. We'll put out a solicitation at the October board meeting. In the meantime, though, if you have interest in the legislative committee, number of you have participated in the past, we'll be gearing that up as soon as we can after the election.
Thank you.
Okay. Michael, could you do a local ordinance?
I think what my chief said is that it has to happen at the state level, I believe, John.
You know, ye have little faith with home rule.
define home rule.
Ordinance. Huh?
Define home rule.
You know, we started fire marshal inspections for commercial people years before the state adopted a rule. So local, I would talk to your attorney, and, you know, we kind of believe that unless the state says you can't do it, you can do it. And I know we're at Dillon's rule state, so that's not true, but I think there's a lot of latitude under statutes for fees.
Good idea.
So great. I had one question for Pauline. I can't recall a timeline on the EDA grant.
No, I'll tell you.
Great. Now,
I just had a call this morning. We submitted everything. Tim Malone and our staff has been the point in this in terms of getting the submissions. There were a lot of very small administrative details. They're all in. The expectation is that EDA we'll be reviewing this by the end of October. Then it goes to Washington for a further review, which is usually more administrative, but the ranking we think will be done in the regional office. Then it goes to Washington. And we're expecting that whether the money gets sent, but it will be effective January 1, 21. But the actual date at which the award is made, we don't know. Secondly, these grants have a way of either being There's three categories of outcomes. One is you can get all the money you ask for, $10 million, give or take. You can get a lesser amount and then negotiate what's in the work plan, or you can get denied. So those are the three options. End of the month for the first cut, then it goes to Washington, and we're hoping to hear, you know, in the calendar year.
Great, great. Thank you. Thank you, Lyle. Anybody else have any items to share or questions at this point?
Here, I just have one more question. There is a attendee with a cell phone 2766241 on the meeting. I'm just wondering who that is for the minutes.
Hello, it's David Norse with the Town of Southington.
Thank you so much, David.
Mr. Chair, one more question. I know it's come up in people who are not on this call, but that is Halloween guidance to communities. I don't mean to turn over a large rock. Are we doing trick or treating?
Right.
Are you doing community events? What's happening? Just a quick sense.
What if folks?
Peter cut out. Peter's frozen. The DPH did put out some guidelines, but I don't know if other towns. I think it's of interest if other towns are what
the
towns are doing.
I've seen Meriden's guidelines, for example, which is not one of our towns. But mm-hmm. Some towns have sent out very specific guidance, so Meriden is one of them. I just don't know where everybody else is at. And if it's not a big issue for you, I'll withdraw my question. But
we have never dictated or ruled on Halloween, except when we had live electric lines on the ground.
This is Melissa in Simsbury. We put out a note basically just reiterating the guidance from the state as well as our local health district to encourage or to discourage traditional door-to-door trick-or-treating and then encouraging, you know, safer activities. And we did have an event in town this past weekend that was a drive-through event, which went well. That's what we did.
Thank you. I've just been asked this by some towns that are not on the call. That's why I wanted to get a sense of it.
Great.
Okay.
One of the future topics that Pauline and I have talked about is each town is required to develop an affordable housing plan. I can't remember the date. I don't know if it was 21 or 22. So that's a future topic that if the committee has interest, that we'll be looking, you know, if not by the end of this year, the first part of the new quarter. Sounds like the state has hired regional plan.
RPA.
Group. Yeah, to do a template. So. That'll be on the agenda in the future.
I believe they said that the template would be out by the end of this month or early November. So
okay.
we could put it on the agenda for December 8th if people want.
Great, great. So we're always looking for agenda item topics. So if anything pops up, feel free to shoot Pauline or and myself an email. So anything else for the good of the order?
Our next meeting is December 8th, which is 2 weeks late or 2 weeks early, depending on which month you're looking at. And that's because of squeezing it in between holidays.
Thank you, Pauline. All righty. If there's nothing else, we'll adjourn the meeting at 12:57. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.